Ronnie's vision here on the screen with the fella hunched over the computer screen and keyboard, the computer geek, that would be the vision that would perhaps apply to Ronnie's talk. For my talk, the vision would be a stubby-fingered cowboy that's short of sleep, calving first calf heifers that's leaned back in the recliner, and has a lot more to do with application and reasonableness. And so it's a little different kind of a vision here that I'd like to take a look at this topic. The organizing committee from the four states here, I'm sure they got together and they said, well, let's pick one topic that's sure to create some controversy, selection for marbling and muscling, benefits and pitfalls, and then who in the world could we get that would be dumb enough to talk about such a topic? And so I'm sure that's where my name came up right there. But it is an interesting one, and I have had some fun trying to review a bit of the literature, but more realistically to sit and think about application and how you might approach that as a rancher on a day-to-day basis. And so hopefully there'll be something here that will at least ring true a little bit with regard to is this reasonable or is it not. In this day and age, in regard to technology, we certainly have the tools to make mistakes faster and with greater accuracy than any time in history. And so that's quite a burden that we bear with regard to technology. And so we have to be fairly careful in considering the cost of the technology that we're applying. And so with that, I'll show you a few things that I thought might at least ring a bell or two with regard to some things that you have available to you. And if you take a look at heritability of traits and thinking about the three major categories of traits, one being reproduction as the most important economically, as Mark has pointed out, and others, but you look at the heritability of those traits, and the heritabilities are reasonably low, regardless of what measure of reproduction that you choose to use, but in that broad category, perhaps 20% or less. In production traits, or traits that would be in the growth area, perhaps feed conversion, those kinds of traits, the heritabilities are a little bit higher, indicating that selection can move those traits a little bit faster, assuming you could get reasonable selection differential of parents and generation turnover, you can move those traits a little faster than you could selecting for reproduction. And then carcass traits are even a bit faster yet, potentially because of higher heritability for carcass traits, up in the 40% bracket for some estimates of marbling and 40, some estimates on ribeye size, actually a little bit larger than that, and it varies depending on the individual study that you're looking at. But by and large, the three major categories, reproduction, production, and carcass traits, elevate stepwise in terms of heritability, indicating that there's more genetic control on carcass traits, and if you chose to do so, that you could change carcass traits faster than you could reproduction and even production. And shear at the bottom there means Warner Braxler shear force, and the reason for the question mark is there's a limited number of studies that have actually dealt with the heritability of shear force or tenderness as opposed to some of these other carcass traits that have been more thoroughly researched. And there is some good literature estimates from Coots and also a summary that Ronnie Green has done that included much of Coots' work that summarized many studies, and that's the studies that I'm going to be showing you. It's not just one study. It's in many cases a dozen studies or more, depending upon the trait. Highly heritable traits are, for the most part, changed best by direct selection for those traits. And on the other hand, on the lowly heritable traits, such as reproductive traits, those are generally best changed through crossbreeding and the application of heterosis and complementarity of breeds, matching up strengths and weaknesses of breeds that we're using in our crossbreeding programs. So on a lowly heritable trait, the tool that you have in there with regard to heterosis is a very valuable tool for you to use. So just some general things to think about as we lean back here this afternoon and think about what we're going to do in the future. Carcass traits can darn sure be changed. And if you look at Angus cattle, because that's the largest database that we have in front of us to really take apart and dissect and evaluate, you can see that there's been some major change in carcass traits in the Angus breed. Now, what that indicates is that in many cases, you're dealing with traits that you have information on. You're dealing with traits that have some degree of heritability, and there's some selection pressure that has been applied by Angus breeders.
And so it's for you to evaluate whether that's improvement or not. And I'm going to be very careful today to not talk about improvement. I'm talking about genetic change in Kirk's traits. Time will tell whether the changes that we've made in some traits are, in fact, improvements. Maybe they are, and maybe they aren't. This is the genetic trend for actual slaughter data in the Angus breed for marbling. And you can see over the years, that's the sire birth year across the bottom of that scale, and you can see that starting clear back in the late 70s and on up to current times that the marbling score has turned right up. This is marbling EPD, I should say, that the marbling EPD has turned right up. And so that would be actual slaughter data. It represents about 71,000 head of cattle that have actual slaughter data in the Angus breed. I also include ultrasound data because in the Angus breed currently the ultrasound data accounts for 294,000 head of cattle that have been scanned. And so you have about four times the number of cattle that are included in ultrasound data. This is ultrasound marbling, and you can see that the upturn began a number of years ago, but really accelerated in the last 10 years, since about 1993. And so, whatever the reason, obviously there was direct selection applied to increase marbling by Angus breeders, and you can see the effect right here in front of us. If we shift over to ribeye size and look at ribeye area, what you see now is actual slaughter data again. And that's the 70,000, 71,000 cattle that have actual slaughter data. You can likewise see a flattening out in there 10, 20 years ago, and then the last 7, 8 years, some upturn in terms of ribeye area and actual slaughter data. You go over and look at ultrasound data, and it perhaps even looks a little bit more dramatic, where you've seen, certainly in the last 5 or 6 years, a dramatic upturn in ultrasound data. Now you realize that with ultrasound data, you're talking about scanning breeding animals for the most part, bulls and heifers. And so in terms of magnitude of fat that are on these cattle as opposed to slaughter steers, there's a different magnitude. And the adjustments that are made in ultrasound data are on a weight basis, and the slaughter data they're made on an age basis. So there's a few little differences here, but I think it pays to go to school on the ultrasound data just simply because it represents a fairly large pool of cattle. So continuing on here, this would be the genetic trend for actual slaughter data on fat thickness. And just using the three traits here, marbling, ribeye size, and fat. And you can see here that this line looks relatively level for actual slaughter data, indicating, like many of you have read in the press, that, you know, hey, you can up marbling without increasing outside fat, and this EPD trend on actual slaughter data would tend to verify that fat line on EPDs is relatively flat. But when you look at the 294,000 cattle that have been scanned, it ain't that way. And this says that what's happened in the last 10 years is marbling has increased, EPD has increased, and the Angus breed ribeye has increased, but the fat has also dramatically increased as well. Very much counter to the idea that outside fat and marbling are at a very low genetic correlation. And so that's reason enough for me, and I'll show you the correlations here in just a minute, but I don't buy it. I don't buy the idea that you can keep cranking marbling and not drag along outside fat at the same time. So I think it is useful to really study the two aspects of the data, the slaughter data and also the ultrasound data. These are the heritabilities and genetic correlations that go with certain traits. And I've just used carcass weight, marbling, ribeye, fat thickness, and percent retail product. And, of course, right out of the fall 2003 Angus sire evaluation. And this is for the slaughter data again, the 71,000 head of cattle that are in that pool. And you can see what these correlations are. And if you follow the diagonal down, that's the heritability for the trait. So the first one there for weight is 0.30. So the heritability of carcass weight is 30%. Going down the diagonal, the heritability of marbling is 36%. Ribeye is 28, and so on down the line. The thing that I'd ask you to look at is look at two of the genetic correlations, one between marbling and ribeye size, which is a minus 0.09, and indicating that it's pretty low, and in fact goes the wrong direction, so that if you pull on marbling, it's actually going to depress ribeye size. If you look at back at the genetic trend, that's not what's happened. So that indicates to you right away that Angus breeders that have selected for marbling have also paid some attention, at least, to ribeye size. At least they've done damage control on that kind of trait. And so they've not allowed themselves to use bulls that are very, very high on marbling, but are damaging in terms of ribeye size. So there's been some selection that's been applied to ribeye size. Otherwise, the high responses on marbling would have depressed the response on ribeye size. The other one that's interesting to look at is marbling and fat that I was just talking about a minute ago at 0.09. And that appears to be very low, low enough that it might not have any impact. If you selected for marbling, you wouldn't expect to see much of a change in outside fat. But this is the actual slaughter data. Now, just keep that location in mind between marbling and fat there, that 0.09. And we'll look at the ultrasound data, and you see that all of a sudden it pops up to 0.22, indicating that if you start pulling on marbling, you're definitely going to pull outside back fat along with it. And unless you apply negative pressure on outside fat and positive pressure on marbling, it's going to be hard for you to prevent that drag-along effect because of the genetic correlation. I didn't show any of the phenotypic correlations. All the correlations you see off the diagonal are all genetic correlations. You see some that are very high. Obviously, the relationship between fat thickness and retail product. As fat goes up, retail product, of course, goes way down. It's very strong, minus 0.49. In the slaughter data, it's even higher than that. It's like 0.8. Another one between ribeye size and retail product. As ribeye size goes up, 0.59, retail product also goes up. So there's a beneficial drag-along effect of that particular genetic correlation, at least up to some limit, not that you can increase or even want to increase ribeye size in an unlimited fashion. So I thought evaluating slaughter data and ultrasound data in this way was interesting, and you might find something there that would kind of pique a thought or a question for the evening. The heritabilities, as indicated on ultrasound measured data in the Angus breed, are much higher than they are for actual slaughter data. That would also verify what some of our friends at Iowa State, Noah Wilson and Gene Rouse, have said for a number of years, and that is that there's less noise and less environmental variation in ultrasound than there is in actual slaughter data. And that appears to be the case here with these higher heritabilities on ultrasound measured data. It looks like if you select for marbling, and in parentheses I put the ultrasound effect there too, it'd be percent intramuscular fat or IMF. If you select for marbling, there would be some decrease in ribeye. It'd be very slight. There'd be some increase in fat. The ultrasound data would say that increase in fat would be more dramatic than what the slaughter data would say. And there'd be some decrease in retail product, and that's of course somewhat related to the increase in fat if you're looking at the ultrasound side of it. If you select for ribeye size, and again, just thinking about one trait at a time here, we'll get beyond that here in just a minute, but just thinking about one trait at a time, if you select for ribeye size, you tend to increase retail product, and those are pretty strong genetic correlations. And you change fat, but you change it with variable results there, depending on whether you're studying the slaughter data or whether you're studying the ultrasound data. And so I would tend to go with the data source that has the most cattle in it, and that would be the ultrasound source. Going on here, it looks like that selection to change net merit, and I say I'm not talking about improving carcass merit. You're going to have to decide that with some economics, but to change carcass merit will require both selection for these traits, some measure of the quantity or muscle, and then some measure of quality. In this example, we're using marbling at the current time. Maybe that's not the best, but that's what we're using here for the moment. So if you want to move those traits, they are heritable, but they're going to require selection pressure being applied to both of them. You're not going to move one and expect the other one to be dragged along in a beneficial direction. It won't happen. So you have to apply selection pressure to both. Summaries of research data that over the years have historically shown higher genetic correlations than what some breed data that has been reported. The Angus breed has reported some fairly low genetic correlations between marbling and outside fat. The Hereford breed has reported a similar result, and so on. But if you look at research studies, it doesn't turn out to be quite that way. And some of these are more antagonistic than others. And, of course, we're focusing here in my comments with regard to carcass traits. And if you just look at marbling and cutability, they're going in the wrong direction. You increase marbling, you tend to decrease cutability. You increase marbling, you tend to decrease yearling weight. You increase marbling, you tend to decrease ribeye area. Marbling and back fat are in the same direction. You increase marbling, you increase back fat. And that 0.35 correlation is larger than those that you see in breed association data. And so it's a different population. That's understood. But I think if you go to school on that ultrasound data in the Angus breed, it fits more with this 0.35 than it does with some of those super low genetic correlations that have been quoted in the past by some of our friends. Marbling and shear force, the reason for that question mark there is it's only based on one study. I don't know exactly what it is, but it would appear that there's some beneficial impact. As marbling goes up, tenderness, shear force would tend to go down slightly. How important that is and what the magnitude of that is, I don't know that anybody can really say yet, but I'm sure there's going to be some future work that'll shed some light on that. In looking at an area that I think is really important as you start thinking about commercial cattle people changing carcass traits, and particularly with regard to muscling and fat deposition, as you maneuver those two tissues around, the impact that may have on reproductive performance, I think, is absolutely telling. And Mike McNeil up at Fort Keogh did a study a number of years ago, and I was quizzing Ronnie on the way out here. He rode out with me, and I was quizzing him if he knew of another study that had been done that looked at the implications of selection for muscling and its impact on reproduction. This is the only one that we know of. But as fat trim weight goes up, this is genetic correlations again, as fat trim weight goes up, age at puberty tends to go down. And you turn that around and you say, well, as leanness goes up, then age at puberty tends to go up as well. And so leanness is an interfering factor in terms of earliness of puberty. Leanness would also be an interfering factor in terms of conception rates, conception rate per service, and interfering factor in terms of calving difficulty, birth weight, and it'd be beneficial as fat trim goes up, calving difficulty would tend to go down, and so on down the line, even mature size. As cattle become leaner and concentration on muscling, mature size tends to creep up, and that would be true if you go back and think about yearling weight and ribeye area and traits like that are related to growth and lean growth. And then also in retail product weight, which is just another way of looking at weight and fat together, because you only got three tissues there that you're dealing with, or three components. You've got weight, you've got fat, and you've got muscle. And so if you know two of them, you're in business. So I think without a doubt that there are some dangers out there, and you understand the dangers because of your familiarity with double muscling. You understand the dangers with extremes of muscling, but I think we also have to be wary of really working hard to select for ribeye size and other traits like that retail product. I did a few sorts within the Angus breed, and I could have done it in another breed, but I wanted to use a breed where there was at least a large pool of data, and so I did a few sorts here, and I'll just share those with you, and then we'll try to wrap some of these things up with a few opinions. I sorted bulls within the Angus breed amongst current sires. There's 4,051 of them that have carcass data, either actual slaughter data or ultrasound data. And I did the upper 1% of the breed of that group of bulls on marbling. And so I wanted to get the elite marbling bulls in the Angus breed and look at the characteristics of those bulls. And so I found if you do that, you get 46 Angus bulls out of 4,051, about 1% of the Angus bulls that are the elite high marbling bulls in the breed. And you can see if you go vertically down from marbling what the Angus breed average is, 0.14, and this elite set of high marbling Angus bulls is 0.68. So they're obviously clearly well above average. And this also correlates to about the upper three standard deviations above average in the Angus breed for marbling. So 0.68, they're very high. If you look at the ribeye, interestingly enough, those bulls are also above average on ribeye. They're dead average on fat at 0.003. On retail product, they're positive. They've been drugged up a little bit in terms of retail product. And then, interestingly, on milk, they're 4 pounds up of the Angus Reed average on milk. And that's one that I have a great deal of concern about. Because if we change cattle with regard to traits like marbling at the expense of increasing milk, I don't see in any way that can be a positive for range beef cattle production. That, to me, that's a negative, and it's something that we really need to think very seriously about. If we go down to the bottom line and look at the 32 bulls that come out on ribeye as the elite ribeye bulls in the breed and what characterized them, they were dead average on marbling. They were well above average, as you would expect, three standard deviations plus on ribeye at 0.61. They were negative on fat, so they were leaner bulls. They were very muscular bulls that were leaner, but yet average on marbling. And then their retail products were high at 0.67. Their yearling weights were 10, 11 pounds up, and their milk was about 20. They were still above average on milk. Kind of an interesting result. And this is based on slaughter data. If you go to ultrasound data and you look at exactly the same thing on ultrasound data, of course, you got four times as many cattle involved potentially here that were scanned, but we're just looking at current sires. But within each of those sires, there's many more progeny that are represented. And you look at the differences here, you can see that the high IMF bulls, there were 37 of them that were more than three standard deviations up. Very high on marbling, above average slightly on ribeye. They were actually fatter, and that goes back to that 0.22 genetic correlation that we were talking about a little bit ago. And so fat has been drug up with these high IMF bulls in the Angus breed. Retail product, they were actually worse than average. Yearling weight, they were up about 7 or 8 pounds. Interestingly, also 21 pounds of milk EPD. They're 4 pounds above Angus breed average. So whether it's slaughter data or ultrasound data, marbling selection drags milk up. If you look at ribeye size there on the bottom line, then you can see they were pretty much average on IMF fat. They were way up on ribeye size. They were average on outside back fat. Retail product, they were very positive. But the yearling weights on these ribeye selected bulls ultrasound, they were a good 23 pounds up on yearling weight. And so you're really selecting for a lot of yearling lean growth in these bulls that are selected for ribeye size. And also, interestingly enough, they were up a bit on milk. So there is some joint selection that's taking place on carcass traits. They're not just people selecting for marbling. There's also some selection applied to other traits. And I look at it as genetic damage control, where you're avoiding bulls that are the worst bulls on certain individual traits. Not that you're using an index yet, which Mark described well as probably the way that we need to be approaching some of these carcass traits along with our function traits. Outlier bulls for marbling tended to be above average for milk and ribeye. Mixed result for fat and retail product. One way with ultrasound, another way with slaughter data. Outlier bulls for ribeye size tended to be average for marbling and above average for retail product, yearling weight substantially, and also milk. Now, if you look at trying to combine some of these things and say, okay, how many outlier bulls are out there in this pool of 4,000 some odd bulls that are outliers for two traits at the same time, not just one at a time, but both marbling and ribeye size? And the bulls of the 4,051 bulls, the bulls that are above, they're one standard deviation up for both traits at the same time. There's 164 of those bulls, and 22 of the bulls are up two standard deviations, and only four bulls are up three standard deviations, and, you know, the real elite bulls. So if the genetic correlation between things like fat and marbling and so on are as low as what some people have said they are based on their data, I would expect to see a whole lot more bulls than four that are in the elite end of the deal for two traits, marbling and ribeye size. And you could say marbling and retail product, and I looked at that, you get about the same number of bulls if you say retail product and marbling, or if you say the marbling and ribeye size. If you apply some degree of EPD accuracy, and I just use a very crude 50% here, which doesn't take many progeny to get you to that level, you reduce the number of bulls. They're up one standard deviation down to 140 bulls. You still get the 22 bulls that are up two standard deviations and four bulls that are up three standard deviations. So it's a whole lot harder when you just put two traits in the pot instead of one. And obviously, we need to put more than just these two carcass traits, and they may not even be the right ones, into the pot in terms of an index if we're going to represent reproduction, production, and product. Multiple trait selection obviously slows response in any one trait, and that's what you just saw. How many Angus bulls are above average for marbling, ribeye? Now let's put in their weaning weight, and let's put in their yearling weight, and scrotal circumference, and also birth weight. I'm using scrotal as kind of a check and balance. And actually, I only used the average scrotal circumference. I didn't even use plus one, plus two, plus three standard deviations. But plus one standard deviation for those traits, you only get 10 bulls in the Angus breed. If you just look at the bulls that are above average for those four or five traits, there's 32 bulls that are above average for those traits. So you see how very difficult it is when you start putting in a measure of reproduction, a measure of production, and some measure of product to start finding these kinds of outlier bulls. And there were no bulls that were plus two standard deviations for these traits, and of course none that were plus three. And so those kinds of outliers for the decathlete type bulls are absolutely unique and absolutely rare. Well, what about marbling and tenderness? I realized that my topic was marbling and muscle. And, of course, I'm not supposed to know too much about either one of those traits. My friends tell me that I get out of breath when I'm driving steel fence posts, so I don't know anything about muscling. And I don't own any black cows, so I obviously don't know anything about marbling. You have to think about that one, but I'll keep going anyway. And I don't. But if you look at Simmental data, there's 102 Simmental bulls that have been characterized for tenderness. And you're looking at the result there. And I took the 10 bulls that were the top bulls on tenderness and looked at what they were in marbling. And I took the 10 bulls that were the toughest bulls in terms of their progeny. And I looked at what they were in marbling. And they were a little bit different. But they were not enough different. But if you plotted those curves in a normal distribution, there would be great overlap between those two curves. And if you wanted to use marbling as an indicator of tenderness, I think you'd be sadly disappointed in segregating that into two populations. So I think at best marbling is a crude predictor of tenderness, and it's certainly no guarantee whatsoever of tenderness in cattle. Ronnie talked about DNA testing and so forth, and there are tests that exist for marbling and tests that exist for tenderness, as he indicated. And as best I can get people that know a lot more about this area than I do to tell me, my classic question is, what proportion of the genetic variation in these traits is accounted for by these tests, by one single test for marbling? And as best I can determine, that it accounts for maybe 10 or 15, at tops 20% of the genetic variation in marbling. And so realizing that marbling may only be 30% heritable, and you've got a huge share of environmental variation in there, and you're accounting with one test maybe for 10 to 15% of the genetic variation in that trait, you can easily see that the amount of variation in marbling total that could be accounted for might be as low as 6% or 8% or something like that. But maybe it's a screen that seed stock breeders can use at an early age to help them determine which bulls are going to be progeny tested. But from a commercial standpoint, it's a whole different scenario, and I see no way that it can be used in a commercial setting at this time. The benefits of selection for marbling and muscling, certainly if you're selecting for marbling alone, you get faster change because you don't have other traits that are antagonistic slowing you down. I don't know anybody that needs to do that nor should do that. If you're selecting for muscling alone, again, same result, but I certainly wouldn't advise anyone to do that. If you apply some selection for marbling and muscling, which I believe is what is going on amongst a number of breeders and breeds that have those kinds of goals, then I think there is a check and balance there that probably prevents you from making fast mistakes and maybe slows down your response a little bit, and that's probably not all bad. I think the other result of keeping some measure of quantity and some measure of quality in your program is that it does reduce the number of out cattle that you're going to have out of your program, and that will pay you dividends. Whether you achieve premiums or not depends upon the degree to which you apply selection, but if you can reduce the number of out cattle, then it's definitely going to pay. the pitfalls of selection for marbling and muscling, and marbling at least, my worry is that there is a risk of too much milk production, and particularly for range cows. And at the same time, I think as a trait, tenderness is the more important trait, and I look at marbling as a threshold trait that you need some of, but I'm not at all sure that you need to continue to crank on marbling and pull it up with selection. I think you need a threshold of marbling, but certainly I believe tenderness is a more important trait. With regard to muscling, I think the risk is there potentially for some lowered fertility. There is a risk there for an increase in general size, and that would be most troublesome at birth and also at mature size. And so that would be the risk that I would see, or the pitfalls on those two traits. In summary, as I leave you here, and hopefully you've got some thoughts and comments and questions for the evening, look forward to that. If you wish to do so and select for marbling and muscling, it will respond, because there's the heritability there. If you can get the data and apply the selection pressure, you can move it. You better make darn sure what your target is before you start, though. Outlier balanced trait bulls are really scarce. And you saw that. And as soon as you put in some reproduction type and production type traits, they get really scarce. And then ultrasound database will likely continue to increase in number. And that will be the bulk of carcass data in the future, at least in my opinion. DNA tests to screen seed stock may be applicable. I don't see that as a commercial reality. Threshold marbling is important. I don't see the extremes of marbling being very important either, because there's some negatives that come along with it. And then, as you have known for a long time, in dealing with genetic antagonisms or genetic correlations that are opposing each other, one of the realistic ways to deal with that is through crossbreeding and taking advantage of complementarity and some heterosis on reproduction traits. So with that, well, I'll close and appreciate your kind attention, and we look forward to your questions and comments tonight. Thank you.